Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. An already deep and bitter divide in the UN Security Council got deeper still today. Hans Blix and Mohamed El-Baradei sat for a third time before a riven body. We are not watching the destruction of toothpicks, Blix said in reference to the dismantling of Iraqi missiles. But we may be watching the unraveling of international order as we have known it. Iraq's cooperation has been positively proactive, said the steady Swede. But battle lines have been drawn and battling diplomats pulled even further apart in a hot display of fragmentation. President Bush, in last night's East Room press conference, said it's time for everyone to lay down their cards on weapons and war. It's a gamble, and a big one. His coalition may be willing, but it looks as small as the stakes are large. Tonight on Point, a divided UN, the future of international order, and a presidency poised at the edge, global and national stakes in the final runway to war. What's more important, preserving international harmony or removing Saddam Hussein from power? Is the UN on the verge of an international meltdown? And a gambling President Bush wants everyone to show their hand. How good are his cards? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined tonight from New York by James Bone, UN correspondent for the Times of London. Good evening and welcome, James Bone.
You're welcome.
Thanks for being with us. And with us in the studio is Graham Allison, director of the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs at Harvard University. Graham Allison, wonderful to have you here.
Pleasure to be here.
James Bone, I know we only have you for a few minutes. I want to dive right into this with you. The British have put forward an amendment to the co-sponsored American and British resolution that would somehow push the weight on Saddam out to March 17th, but not necessarily. How would this work?
Basically, the idea is they're going to come back on Tuesday, possibly Wednesday, and vote on a deadline of an ultimatum that Iraq must disarm by March 17th. And the only way that deadline would be removed would be if the Security Council subsequently concluded that Iraq had complied. That would require positive action by the Security Council that Britain and the United States as veto-bearing members could block.
Is this a meaningful extension of time to those nations which appear to be at this moment a majority on the Security Council who oppose any move toward war?
I don't think it's correct to say they're a majority. It may be true that there aren't 9 votes for the British, but there are 15 members. I don't know whether you could say that 8 of them would oppose this resolution at this stage. There are 2 games going on. The first game is that the British, the Americans, and the Spanish have to round up 9 votes in order to get the resolution through. And the second game is once they've rounded up 9 votes, they have to deal with potential vetoes from Russia and France. This is a sweetener, this deadline is a sweetener for the middle ground voters to try and get the 9 votes necessary. If those 9 votes are obtained, it's pretty clear now that the French intend to veto the resolution, probably in tandem with the Russians. So there's very little chance of this resolution getting through unless the French do a quite spectacular climb down.
There's a lot to ask you about there, and I know we don't have much time, but quickly, first of all, March 17th is just a week from next Monday, so it's not much of an extension. But you think it looks as though it may be enough of a sweetener to bring the American and British number of allies, if you will, on the Security Council up to 9, just those extra few days?
It's possible. Things are still developing. There's one story I want to tell you about, which is that there's recently emerged that Dr. Blix failed to tell the Security Council today about something that was contained in the report that he submitted to them later, which was what's called the clusters document, a 173-page report.
Yes.
Buried in there is the fact that the inspectors have recently found the existence of an undeclared Iraqi drone with a wingspan of 7.5 meters. Now, that was not mentioned at all in his report. The Americans are furious about it.
Is it a game-breaker, maker?
That is a possible game-breaker, and it throws into doubt Dr. Blix's objectivity. Colin Powell, as you might remember, told the Security Council back in February that the Americans had evidence that Iraq had test flown a drone in a racetrack pattern for 500 kilometers nonstop.
Yes, we heard that.
That would be a clear violation of the 150-kilometre limit. Dr. Blix, in his report, in his written report buried in this 173 pages, says that further investigation is required to establish the actual specifications and capabilities of these remotely piloted vehicles. But he should have mentioned something about this discovery of an undeclared drone with a 7.5-metre wingspan in his report, and he didn't, and that is going to be a big story over the next couple of days, and that is possible to transform the terms of the debate.
Is it all coming down? I don't know whether to consider that large or small in the long run. I mean, the terms of the debate today were at points extremely grand in terms of the entire fabric of world order and fundamental predispositions toward peace and war. But does it, in fact, boil down to a 7-meter wingspan on a drone? Is that enough to tip the scale here?
No, I think you're right in that way, that it's quite clear that the French are fighting the Americans, not the Iraqis, and the issue is the future world order. I think I think the French made that quite clear today, and that their veto would be based on that if they were to veto. But you know, it would make a difference on the middle ground, for instance, and it does make a difference on the historical assessment of Blix.
Mm-hmm. And I hear you saying that 9-member vote seems within the realm of possibility.
Well, I would say it's within the realm of possibility. Yes.
And who at this point are the tip votes, the swing votes?
The tip votes have been for some time Pakistan, Chile, and Mexico.
And if those come on board, France vetoes anyway, how do you anticipate what follows?
I think there'll be a war.
And the United States and the UK will say, well, look, we got the majority. It's just those French.
That would help them a lot. Even Tony Blair, it would help him a lot if he could get a majority of the Security Council. And then he could argue that the veto was unjustified and undemocratic. James, that would help him a lot.
James Bone, you're at the UN a lot. If that is what transpires, how deep the damage to the United Nations?
I don't think the damage is deep. People are already talking about a possible heads of state meeting after the war so everyone can kiss and make up. I don't think the damage is deep at all.
Well, there you go. High language and the expectation that we'll be right back on the beam. James Bone,
thank
you so much for joining us tonight.
You're welcome. Bye.
James Bone is UN reporter for the Times of London. Graham Allison, dive into this crazy sea with us. It's hard to know what dimensions to put around any particular bit of rhetoric, any particular move here. We heard again today some very high-blown talk in the UN about the need for war, about the need for peace. What are the stakes here in terms of international order as we've known it, the mechanisms that we've leaned on in the post-war world? How much is on the line, or is this just a kind of a verbal spat that will get passed and bygones?
I think that this is a big issue, so I think I would disagree with James in terms of it being principally or essentially rhetorical. I think that for the other states involved, particularly for France, as it's become to articulate it even clearer, but for Russia, for Germany, for China, as one of the parties said to me separately in a different setting, we know Saddam Hussein doesn't play by the rules. This is a question of whether the U.S. plays by the rules. So this is a test of the U.S. willingness to work within a system which, after all, the U.S. took the lead in creating now 50 years ago, in which a Security Council resolution is required to authorize legitimate use of force.
And yet we hear the argument that during the long Cold War, that was often ignored because there was never agreement on anything, that the U.S. has brought this case to the United Nations, has argued and debated and participated in the process ever since last fall when President Bush came, that in itself constitute a kind of acknowledgement of the primacy of the United Nations in international affairs. Does all that count for naught if at the end of the day the vote is ignored and off we go to war without the Security Council formal blessing?
Well, absolutely not. In fact, I think you put it very, very well, that having chosen to go the UN route and having given some even further credibility to a UN Security Council system in which, in order to go to war legitimately, one needs a Security Council resolution, the U.S. has invested even more in this process. President Bush has then put it to the UN, almost as a test of UN virility, either in this instance, you do the right thing, or you are going to be responsible for declaring the UN irrelevant. So that's on the American side of the table. On the British or, on the French or other sides of the table, there was a very nice quote from one of the members in the New York Times today who said, to be a superpower is not to say to us that whatever you want to do and expect others to agree, whether they agree or not. And so I think this really is a test. And I think if it turns out, which I think it's most likely, that the Security Council resolution is not forthcoming or is vetoed, and if the U.S. goes ahead with British assistance, which I believe it will do, I think this will be a historic point in the undermining of the UN structure as we've known it.
George Bush appeared ready to do that last night. Let's listen to one statement he made in response to a question from Mark Noller, CBS Evening News White House correspondent. Here we are from the press conference last night.
When it comes to our security, if we need to act, we will act. And we really don't need United Nations approval to do so. I want the United Nations to be effective. It's important for it to be a robust, capable body. It's important for its words to mean what they say, and as we head into the 21st century. Mark, when it comes to our security, we really don't need anybody's permission.
And there's a phrase, Graham Allison, that the president used and carefully used several times last night. When it comes to our security, we really don't need anybody's permission. That sounds like he's invoking the right to self-defense that supersedes anything mandated the UN to intervene. But that's not the premise upon which we've been approaching Iraq so far. We've been approaching this saying Iraq is not in compliance with UN resolutions. Can we credibly switch horses next week and say, oh, we didn't get the vote, we're threatened as a nation, we're going in anyway?
Good question, and I think that's the dilemma that the president finds himself trying to cope with.
But he doesn't see it as a dilemma.
Well, I think
apparently,
I think having or seeing that he's at risk of failing with respect to the argument which he was making in the first instance, mm-hmm. he's trying to retreat to the what is actually a UN authorized in the broader sense. Right of self-defense if the U.S. were threatened immediately. And the proposition that if your security is threatened, you have the right to self-defense is an accepted part of the U.N. structure. But in this instance, having argued that the principal problem was that Iraq had failed to disarm and that the objective was to disarm Iraq through a process that was UN authorized with a unanimous resolution in 1441, he's kind of hoisted on his own petard mm-hmm. as the international community would see it.
James Bone says this will all blow over. And whatever happens, even war with Iraq in the face of a veto by permanent members of the Security Council, he says there's already scheduled a heads of state meeting for post this rocky moment, and that people will kiss and make up. Can you see it? I mean, for order to be maintained, that has to happen. It's hard to imagine the major powers going forward in a deeply riven way, but might they?
Well, I think this is why this is really is the great game of the period, and why the Security Council discussions and debates have been so riveting for so many people. Here, one's had a system which may not have been didn't work in every instance, but at least provided a structure of order in which a UN Security Council in the post-Cold War environment provides an opportunity for the powers to talk to each other and to come to some agreement according to a set of rules. At the same time, one's got the emergence of the U.S. as the hyperpower, as the French said, as the unipolar power, which is got a very strong unilateralist impulse in this administration, and which is inclined to say maybe there's an alternative international order in which we set the rules. We don't, of course, have to obey by the rules if we decide that they don't apply to us, but they apply to the rest of the folks. And I think what the French and the Germans and the Chinese and most of the rest of the world are saying is, whoa, this looks like a rogue elephant. and how are we going to cope and survive with this rogue elephant? So I think it's the stakes in this are very, very high, and I think that no matter what happens in the aftermath, of course, there'll be a meeting in which everybody says, yes, of course, things matter, but the question is Colin Powell going to come to the U.N. the next time?
Mm-hmm. We are talking tonight about, we're taking the measure of international order and a presidency, both in a crunch. What's more important to you now, removing Saddam or international harmony? Did you listen to the Security Council debate today? Who's persuasive to you? France, Mexico, Colin Powell, join us. 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point. This is On Point. We are taking the measure of international order and a presidency tonight, both in a crunch. What do you think? Have you been listening? Have you been hearing the president's line, the lines in the UN deeply divided? Does the UN look more important and central than ever to you, or on the brink of a meltdown? And is this all kabuki theater? Will everyone magically fall in line next week? Or is this a real crisis? President Bush says it's time for everyone to show their hands. What cards is he holding? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined in the studio tonight by Graham Allison. He's former Assistant Secretary of Defense and now Professor of Government and Director of the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs at Harvard University. We are joined as well now from Washington by Stephen Wayne, Professor of Government at Georgetown University, co-author of Presidential Leadership and author of The Road to the White House. Good evening and welcome, Stephen Wayne.
Good evening.
Stephen Wayne, international order has all kinds of questions flying around tonight. So does President Bush. He put forward a very kind of solemn face of the reluctant president, reluctant warrior last night. He has had very high poll numbers, but there are some new polls out that don't look as high. Many observers are talking about how much he's putting on the line here, how bold this presidency is looking, and that bold is said both with admiration and with a bit of fear. You study presidencies. How big a risk is President Bush taking in pushing the envelope as far as he's pushing it now toward war?
Well, he's taking a very big risk. I mean, this could lose him the 2004 election if things go wrong in Iraq. And there is certainly a strong possibility that they could. Everybody domestically, many people domestically, and a lot of people internationally will jump all over him. They'll say that he initiated a needless war, that we could have contained Saddam Hussein. Many lives were lost, and that he was, shoot from the hip Texan. On the other hand, he's trying to protect himself. Should there be a terrorist attack? Should there be an Iraqi connection? Should it be a weapon of mass destruction? He is trying to prevent that from happening and show with this military operation that's pending towards Iraq that he's done everything in his power to prevent another 9/11 from happening.
And he was clearly speaking last night or trying to speak to that very security-minded part of the American public. And yet today we see a new poll out from the Quinnipiac University that shows, and who knows, polls, but here's a 48-44% margin. American voters say they would vote for the as-yet-unnamed Democratic Party candidate for president over Republican president incumbent George W. Bush.
Yeah,
I mean, who knows? It's a long way away.
I don't think that poll means anything. What it suggests is that people are very fearful, and I think to some extent even the president is a little bit fearful because we don't know what is ultimately going to happen. The fact of the matter is Bush is very popular from his response to 9/11, mm-hmm. and that has carried over and insulated him from the very bad economic news. The real problem is that the military incursion in Iraq will probably produce more bad economic news, and so if that military incursion does not go well, he'll be in serious trouble.
In a historical context, how bold a move is this by President Bush? How risky a move? Is this within the normal range of presidential gambles, or is this something that catches the eye as distinctly different, a greater risk?
That's a very hard question to answer. Harry Truman seized on a UN resolution to commit American forces to Korea. Lyndon Johnson seized on what he claimed at the time were North Vietnamese gunboats attacking vessels in the Gulf, in the Tonkin Gulf, to initiate a large-scale operation in Vietnam. Of course, in the case of both Truman and Johnson, we were in the Cold War, and they put it in that context. A war has changed now. It's a war against terrorism.
But I think it's very risky.
I think it's extremely risky, but I also think that the president has been very, very consistent in his mindset. We have to remember that 9/11 was a redefining moment of the Bush presidency. It gave him a purpose. It gave him a resolve. He elevated national security to the top of the agenda, and it stayed at the top of the agenda, and it has reaped him very beneficial public opinion polls and political results in the 2002 election.
To date, but this will be a different world when the bullets are flying, and it's useful, I think, to hear you put it in the context of Korean War, Vietnam War. I mean, not to say it will be like either of those, but that's the scale of event that we're moving toward here. Graham Allison, Tom Friedman looked at the whole situation a few days ago, and he said the president's trying the equivalent of the long bomb here. And he says while it appeals to him in its boldness, the kind of geopolitical game changer that victory and a good aftermath of war in Iraq could be, that he fears that the Bush administration has failed to create a context for his boldness to succeed, didn't support Kyoto global warming, went after the Russians in dropping the ABM treaty, tax cuts that don't give us the resources necessarily to go to war, hasn't necessarily primed the Israelis to pull back on settlements and open up to a better future there. He says, here's how I feel. I feel as if the president is presenting us with a beautiful carved mahogany table. That is a bold gesture. But if you look underneath, you discover this table has only one leg. And what he's saying in substance there is that it's that international support and order that's already eroded even before this drastic, dramatic point at the UN.
I saw the piece and I liked it very much. I think the basic analysis is on target. I think that to go back to Stephen's point just a second and agree, this is a situation in which it really is a long bomb. In the long, throwing a Hail Mary, in effect, if you succeed, it seems brilliant. We can remember when the Patriots with the Flutie pass
the turned out to long be, bomb, literally.
To be successful. But if you fail, then all the wheels come off. And it seems to me that as the administration has tried to make the case for war with Iraq, while the probability of a short, successful victory is the most likely outcome. It's gone about reaching to, this is going to create democracy in Iraq, a highly improbable proposition. This is going to tilt the politics in the Middle East with respect to Arab Islam and terrorism. Indeed, I think most analysts would say the probability of recruiting for bin Laden is higher than the probability of this leading to some outbreak of democratization or moderation in the Middle East. So it seems to me that he's invested so much in this setting that one's got a lot riding. I think all that being said, if it's a short, glorious victory, whatever happens in the aftermath, unless it's horrible, he'll look 10 feet tall. If it turns out to be a mess, which seems to me at least one chance in three, because it's prolonged, because there's a use of biological and chemical weapons against Americans in the field or us here at home, if there are other major terrorist events, I think that we may look back on this and say, wait a minute, what were we about? And then there's the even larger picture that you painted earlier, which is what does this do for the level of international cooperation that the U.S. requires to advance the most important objectives we have, for example, war on terrorism.
Mm-hmm. And there, the French Foreign Minister Dominique de Villepin said today, was one of those describing this in very broad terms. You can hear the crowd in the Security Council, at least the big powers, not ready to be on board, probably not ready to cheer that quick, sudden victory, even if it comes. He's nailing his flag to concern over the international order itself.
In a few days, we will be facing an essential choice: disarming Iraq through war or through peace. And this crucial choice implies others. It implies the international community's ability to resolve current or future crises. It implies a vision of the world, a concept of the role of the United Nations. As a permanent member of the Security Council, I will say it again. France will not allow a resolution to pass that authorizes the automatic use of force.
French Foreign Minister Dominique de Villepin, obviously there in translation. Stephen Wayne, here he's painting the United States as headed off in a direction away from what the UN represents, the suggestion that the U.S. president is way out of step here. Historically, again, is President Bush further out of step with a UN consensus at the moment than predecessors have been with an international consensus?
That's a hard question to answer. I think what we're seeing is a fight over influence. Basically, President Bush is acting as if he were the president of the world's only superpower. And the French and the Germans and the Russians, they say, hey, listen to us. We want to have some influence in this. And this is not the first blow of the fight. As you noted at the beginning, Kyoto, ABM, there have been a whole series of unilateral actions at home and abroad by this president that scares a lot of people in the international community and also at home. So we're seeing sort of a double whammy here. We're seeing a fight over policy, and we're seeing at the same time a fight over influence.
And what does that mean for the international fabric? A lot of callers want to join to this. Let's turn to them. Paul's calling from York, Maine. Hi, Paul. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Tom, I want to thank you for this your program. It's wonderful. And you folks at NPR are making a tremendous contribution. We owe you a great debt of gratitude, and I think everybody should give you money.
We're just doing our job, Paul. What's on your mind?
Okay. I'm a Vietnam vet. I voted for President Bush. I support him, but I oppose the war. I believe we owe a great debt of gratitude to the people who, like France, who are opposing this war, because they are going to bail the president and this country out. It would be a disaster if we went to war without the support of the United Nations. And the great lesson I think we're learning from this is world democracy in action. And what we are learning is that what appear to be conflicts between two countries, like the United States and Iraq, are really conflicts that involve the entire world and cannot be solved except by an international body like the United Nations. And I'll close by saying that I agree with what the French said. We can win a war technically, the United States, but we cannot establish the peace alone.
Paul, thanks for your call and for your comment. And you give us a great phrase there I want to look at for a moment, Graham Allison, world democracy in action. And yet, despite the trappings of the UN Security Council, is the world a democracy?
Well, I like the phrase, as you say, it rings, but it's not quite right. The Security Council nonetheless does represent a degree of the sharing of power among the great powers and is democratic in the sense that there's a set of rules in which, according to the rules, if I can't persuade the members of the Security Council, 9 of them, to vote for this, and can't persuade all of the members of the P5 not to veto it, I've signed up to a set of rules in which I'm supposed to wait and continue trying to persuade them.
And Paul makes clear a good point here, that this has all made clear the fact that the world is one organism. It's all interlinked. You can't really isolate a single conflict very often. Yet there's the idea out there that the Bush administration and London will come up with those 9 votes. France will veto. Maybe there'll be more vetoes. But the U.S. and U.K. will say, look, we got what we needed. We got majority support. Never mind these guys, they're out to lunch. They just don't get it. A kind of populist approach here. The Security Council has done itself proud on the raw numbers. forget the French and Russians. We're off to do the right thing, and we have a blessing. Will that count in anybody's eyes?
I think it will. I think if they succeed in that, in the Cold War period, when the Soviet Union was the stick in the mud, when there was a consensus with them left out, nonetheless, the UN in effect authorized absent a veto, and it had a legitimizing effect. Mm-hmm. I think in this instance, why Colin Powell and Straw are working so hard to try to get a majority is, and what Blair has said, if there's one party out, and maybe even if there's two parties out, one will be able to say, well, they simply don't get it, but all the rest of us do. Now, why does it matter so much that there's some form of legitimation of this? It matters a lot in Turkey. It matters a lot in Egypt. It matters a lot in Indonesia as leaders are trying to speak to populations in which 80 or 90% of the people are against this to say, well, there was some process and the UN played some role, and that's the basis on which this action's going forward. And since these are countries and actors whose cooperation we need for some other purposes in other instances, not for this war, not for fighting it, mm-hmm. but for trying to build a peace after, for trying to fight terrorism in the meantime, the benefit to the U.S. if the current U.S. British effort succeeds in getting majority would be significant. Now, I think at this
even
stage,
if it's just half a loaf from the Security Council,
but it would be 2/3 of a loaf. I would say I think that it is very much in question whether it's going to succeed in getting the 2/3 of a loaf.
Even those 9 votes, Stephen Wayne. When you listened to President Bush last night, just reading this man, this president, did he look like a president confident that he'll come with something out of the Security Council, or was he signaling, I really, honestly, truly, finally don't care. I'll do this with or without even that 2/3 of a loaf.
I think he was signaling the latter. I think he was saying, the vote is for the British. We don't care about the vote all that much. Sure, we'd like it, the support. But President Bush has determined that this is in our national interest, and he's going to go ahead with it regardless of the vote. We'll try to do the best we can. I think there are some people who on the right who are saying we shouldn't have gone to the UN to begin with. We should just protect our national interest. And I think regardless, Paul said that the French are basically to be praised in this, but the fact of the matter is the French may not change their position, but regardless of the French, that's not going to change the outcome. We're going to go into Iraq.
And Graham Allison, the knock-on effect here, in either of these situations where we go to war without the full blessing, is there a kind of knock-on that affects the whole structure of international relations as we've known them? Does this cast a shadow over, I don't know, the IMF, you name it, all the acronyms that we float around, the World Bank, on and on? Or is this just rough-and-tumble play here, and folks will pull themselves back together, patch up their egos, and keep the fundamental structure going?
Well, I think that's the fundamental question, and I think it's hard to tell, but I would say that one sees, at least for the UN and security structures in this, I think more, the higher end is invested. I think this is really an opening battle in the question of how the rest of the world comes to grips with the sole superpower.
We're talking tonight. We're taking the measure of international order and a presidency, both in a crunch. Now, is this presidency approaching its finest hour or losing its grip? Will war, if and when it comes, pull Americans and the world into line or drive them apart? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are taking the measure of international order and a presidency tonight, both in a crunch as war approaches. My guests tonight are Graham Allison, former Assistant Secretary of Defense, now Director of the Center, the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs at Harvard University, in the studio with me tonight. And from Washington, D.C., Stephen Wayne, Professor of Government at Georgetown University. You can join the conversation as well. Did you listen to the Security Council debate today? Who is persuasive to you? France, Mexico, Colin Powell. And what about last night and the president? President Bush says it's time for everyone to show their hand. What cards is he holding? We're at 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-259-9255. A lot of hot rhetoric and clashing worldviews today. Here's the British Foreign Secretary, Jack Straw, saying that peace can only be had by backing up diplomacy with a credible threat of use of force.
The paradox we face is that the only way we are going to achieve disarmament by peace of a rogue regime which all of us know has been in defiance of this council for the past 12 years is by backing our diplomacy with a credible threat of force. I wish we lived in a different world where this was not necessary, but sadly we live in that world. And the choice, Dominique, is not ours to how this disarmament takes place. The choice is Saddam Hussein's. It's his choice. Would that it were ours, because it would be so easy, but sadly it is not.
The choice, Dominique, the choice, he says. The British secretary therefore addressing directly and by his given name the French foreign minister. It was getting hot by UN standards there. But let's give that its due for a moment, Graham Allison. He's saying, look, I wish we lived in a different world. But, he's saying, and Hans Blix as much as said himself today, the progress that's being made is being made because all these troops are massed around Iraq. The United States is not popular globally right now. And President Bush is, you know, look at the foreign magazine covers and newspaper covers. My gosh, he's getting kicked around. But are the opponents of this war themselves putting their heads in the sand in some degree, somehow? I mean, are we making this progress because of the very kind of, big gun that the United States is showing? Is that the reason we've made the progress that we have made?
I think the answer is yes, that the decade of defiance by Saddam in the face of UN resolutions that had no force backing them is evidence of his behavior in the absence of a credible threat of force. It's only the gun at his head that he fears may be fired that's causing him to take the actions that he's currently taking. So I believe that's the fundamental point. But I think the question in terms of timing is how long can you keep a gun at his head credibly threatening to use it if it's required, in order to cause him to become more cooperative. Mr. Blix says for a matter of months, if Saddam is appropriately motivated. President Bush says he's given him enough time, he failed his last test, and we need to act now.
Stephen Wayne, for the president, there's all kinds of issues here about keeping the gun to his head. But let's just look at it in terms of a presidency and a political reality. Never mind the logistics and the American soldiers sweltering through a summer and the cost and everything else that goes with that. The families kept apart all that time. Can the president politically, even if he had a mind to, which he clearly doesn't, but if he had a mind to, could he politically hold the center, hold his posture here for months with that full U.S. military pressure on? Could he politically do that?
No, I don't think he could. I think his supporters among the right, the National Security Republicans, the Christian Coalition and the like would say, come on, you've given them enough time, let's do it. He's just stringing you out. And I think to some extent the American people right now are impatient. There's always been this kind of streak that we've always had some qualms about the United Nations in general. It's good to be part of an international organization. It's not good as a superpower to have an equal vote with a very, very small state or even a state such as France. And so I think there is a feeling, okay, Bush has convinced about two-thirds of the American people that at this point we've probably given Saddam Hussein enough time.
On the basis of what do you cite that number today on March 7th, Stephen Wayne?
Well, I've just been seeing polls that show about 60-65% saying
polls. Okay.
If you ask the question, will you support a military incursion, should the president use military force, about 2 out of 3 tend to say yes.
Even without the UN?
Well, the fact of the matter is that once the battle starts...
Well, that's a different story, though, isn't it? I mean, once the battle starts, hey, we're all Yanks now.
Well, yeah, but this is... I think the fact of the matter is that American people are very nervous, but they're basically supportive of the president, at least in the short run. Mm-hmm. And if there is a fair amount of opposition abroad. Sometimes that works to even reinforce American opinion at home.
Stephen Wayne, thank you so much. It's been great to have you tonight. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Stephen Wayne is professor of government at Georgetown University and author of The Road to the White House. David's calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. How are you
great,
all
great,
tonight?
Great, thanks. Great.
Yeah, I think most long bombs do fall, you know, uselessly in the end zone without being caught. And I believe that George Bush is in the process of gambling away his reelection, but because I think ultimately people are going to perceive that he's making the country less secure, not more secure. But what I would like to ask Mr. Allison is, does he not think that President Bush would be closer to getting Security Council support now if he'd made it clear from the beginning that he was going to wait for it, that he was going to take the Security Council seriously, and that he really wanted their support, and that he considered the UN mechanism important for the world at large.
So you're not persuaded by the speech that George Bush gave last fall. You think he's just been going through the motions, David?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because he made it clear from the very beginning that if he didn't get the support he wanted, he was going to do what he wanted anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like saying, you know, we're going to have an election, but if I don't like the results, I'm going to imagine the results.
Well, there's some very complex dynamics around that one, but it's a good question, David. Thank you for your call. Graham Allison, how about it? Was there a way to both put the full pressure on Saddam and secure UN Security Council support for this? You said earlier we had to put the force to Saddam's head, and yet we haven't had... We're not getting support for that. Why not? Why has the U.S. failed to get that support? Is it just wrangling for position, as Stephen Wayne said earlier, or something else here? Is there a way it could have been done?
Well, I think it's a very, very good question. And I think that obviously there'll be a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking as there is after a long bomb that succeeds or fails.
All the way to 2004 in the ballot box.
Indeed. And I think that at this point, there's no question whatever that the way the administration talks to the American public grates on much of the international community. There's no question whatever that a lot of the diplomacy that, as David suggests, says my way or the highway doesn't engender enthusiasm for getting on, your way. And as things have got tougher, the administration has said, well, let me just explain to you. And it's almost like playing chicken with the UN.
Mm-hmm.
We've taken the wheel, or the steering wheel, we've thrown it out. Our car is going where it's going.
Mm-hmm.
If the UN wants to be in a crash and be run over by this, unfortunately, that's your choice. But you will have destroyed the UN. You will have made it irrelevant. You will have taken it the way of the League of Nations. That, for almost any country, is demeaning. And I think that I've been surprised by the extent to which, little by little, as the French have stood up, others are getting to say, yeah, we agree.
The whole congregation is suddenly on its feet.
And if you watch this in terms of populations and public opinion internationally, our case has been totally unsuccessful. All across Europe, 75-85% of people are against a war with Iraq now. So what the president has failed to demonstrate, I think, internationally and also here at home, is the urgency for action now.
Hmm.
I can understand why, having got ready to go, we're ready to go. We've heard about this long enough.
Mm-hmm.
For many Americans, they got a short attention span anyhow. We're tired of
enough
this.
Already.
Let's be done. But in terms of international opinion, where one's talking about a war that has so many uncertain consequences, this is not a compelling case. And in particular, when the Korean situation has become, as former Secretary Perry said yesterday, the most dangerous spot on earth. And the administration is saying, well, there's nothing urgent about North Korea, which is just about to acquire some more nuclear weapons.
Mm.
But this is urgent.
But
it's not persuasive.
Let's just go to the heart of that for a second, because what's suggested by that is that most of the world community could have gone right on with this Iraq style during those dozen years that are now so bewailed by the White House. That takes us to the point of Bush's credibility when he says we can't tolerate it now, post 9/11, because the linkage could be there between Saddam and terrorists. You could transfer nukes or chem or bio, you name it. Isn't that a real well, possibility, threat? I mean, are they blithe somehow in their attitude when they don't take that as seriously as George Bush?
Great question. I think that, I mean, I would say President Bush certainly has got it half right. That is, most of the world will tolerate most developments most of the time and will never be able to get up the collective action that would be required to address an emerging threat. And post 9/11, one can see with the potential mixture of terrorists and weapons of mass destruction, that's unacceptable.
And certainly before Bush threw the steering wheel out the window, to use your metaphor, I mean, Saddam just played the UN like a Kentucky fiddle. He could do that for years.
Absolutely. So absent President Bush's making this an issue, it wouldn't be an issue. And I think that's on the one side. On the other side, having made it an issue, he hasn't made persuasive the case why it requires urgent action now. If we didn't act on Iraq now but waited 3 or 4 months, particularly if we focused on Korea during those 3 or 4 months, what would happen in Iraq? What would change? Maybe Bush would find some more smoking guns. Mm-hmm. Maybe something else. Now, for the French, I suspect it'll never come the day when you will have found enough. And maybe by now the Germans have got dug in too. For the Russians, I would be surprised if that was the case, and for much of the rest of world opinion. But I think the way that the hand is played out, only President Bush bringing the issue to the front has caused us to look at the fact that we will, about many emerging threats, need to find some capacity internationally to act upon them. And without leadership, it won't happen. The question is whether if the U.S. decides that, well, if the rest of the people don't want to play, we'll simply do it ourselves, one's going to end up with a U.S.-defined international order, which will look something like the modern Rome, or it certainly won't be the Security Council system as we've known it.
And leaving everyone else feeling buffaloed, stampeded, and maybe demeaned. Benedict is calling from Kennebunk, Maine. Hi, Benedict. You're on the air.
Hello. I'd like to make two quick points. The mentioning of Bush wanting everybody to show their card and that people talk about gambling there all the time. Mm. I think what he's referring to is really just that people own up to whether, in the face of all they're seeing, can they honestly say, no, Saddam is complying or he's working on complying, it's okay, we're fine with that. And see, I'm German, and I've been in the country for about 10 years now, and I monitor the German news on these topics. And the last time, Joschka Fischer...
German foreign minister, yes?
Yeah, and last time he commented on proof of Iraq's wrongdoings being shown to the UN, and the demands that we now need to go attack them and all that, he said that obviously the inspections are going well, some results were coming out. Obviously, diplomacy is working.
And yeah, that was his comment today. Benedict, our time's running short, and I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to leave it there. That was his comment today. The Bush administration clearly not reading it the same way. Graham Allison, a last question for you. If things do fall apart, don't come together with you, and we go ahead in broad stroke, if the system comes out of this changed in some way, redefined, what does it look like? How does it look different with the rogue elephant on top and this sort of holiday from history period, the last decade where we thought, you know, we've got this new world democracy coming together, not standing up so well. What's the difference? What's the new world?
I would say the big question mark is how easy or hard the war turns out to be. If it turns out that the U.S. goes it alone, which I believe President Bush will do if he doesn't get the Security Council resolution, and if it's a short, glorious victory, then the U.S. will look 10 feet tall and will say to other countries, you were sniveling. Here it turns out that Saddam was worse than we thought, as we will...
But what about consensus? Is consensus over with? They were snivelers, we were right, that's all over?
I suspect that the U.S. will be about the project of trying to define a new international order based on U.S. unipolarity.
Whew. A new world order with every Bush presidency, it seems. Graham Allison, it's always great to have you. Thank you for coming in tonight. Graham Allison is former Assistant Secretary of Defense and Professor of Government and Director of the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs at Harvard University. Listeners, you can continue this conversation on our website. Go to onpointradio.org. Click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This is WBUR. We're